All right, Alexander, let's talk about one-time finance minister Yanis Varoufakis, who is now the leader of the Democracy in Europe movement, 2025, DiEM25, and his EuroLeaks release, his recordings of his Eurogroup meetings in 2015 that brought Greece up to the referendum on the new austerity package that was supposedly negotiated between Varoufakis, Tsipras, the radical left Syriza, and Dijsselbloem and Schäuble and all these guys in Mario Draghi and all these guys in Brussels. And Varoufakis recorded all those meetings, and he has released this, he's released audio files of these meetings, and it's supposedly this big bombshell revelation as to what was going on and how the EU negotiates. And it's kind of interesting. I went through it. You went through it. And Varoufakis gave an introduction to the leaks before he put them out into the public sphere. And let me read you what he said, and then you can get into breaking those leaks down. Today, March 14th, 2020, the Democracy in Europe Movement 2025, DiEM25, is releasing the complete audio files of Yanis Varoufakis' Eurogroup meeting in 2015 on EuroLeaks DiEM25.org. During 2015, Yanis Varoufakis participated in 13 Eurogroup meetings. After the first three Eurogroup meetings, it became clear that no minutes were taken. This kind of intransparent action by an unelected group of politicians who influence all our lives is unacceptable. That is why DiEM25 is today releasing the recordings of the meetings of the Eurogroup from 2015. Two particular aspects should be emphasized. Number one, the new right-wing Greek government of Nea Dimokratia has repeatedly tried to lay the blame of Syriza's failed economic policies to Yanis Varoufakis' 2015 negotiation for a better deal that made more sense than the Troika's repeatedly failed austerity-oriented memorandum. In short, they are accusing the only one who stood against the absurdity of austerity politics for the results of austerity politics. Number two, the European community is still trapped in massive austerity programs, which in many countries have led to a renaissance of right-wing populism, with all the consequences that can be observed at the Greek-Turkish border, inhumanity and xenophobia. The decisions of that time have had a long-lasting impact, not just on the Greek population, but on all Europeans. What we aim to achieve by releasing the recordings is nothing less than the democratization of the EU. Only through transparency is it possible for elected parliamentarians to make fundamental decisions. DiEM25, as a pan-European organization, has a special interest in restoring the confidence of the citizens of Europe in its institutions and to make Europe finally become what it has failed to be so far, a community that serves the peoples of Europe and creates a better future for all citizens, not just financial institutions and powerful vested interests. Brexit has happened, and we have to make sure that the European Union does not continue to lose itself in petty squabbles where no single country will emerge the winner. Much trust has been lost over the last few years. With this initiative, we do wish to play into the hands of the Euroskeptics, but rather we do not wish to play into the hands of the Euroskeptics, but rather to ensure that by moving towards more transparency and democracy, the truth and faith of the people is regained. EuroLeaks is a wake-up call to all politicians in Europe to serve the citizens of Europe again and make them aware of all important decisions that affect them. Alexander, at the end of the day, people do need to be made aware that, yeah, that Varoufakis has his pluses and his minuses, as all human beings do. He does not want the European Union to break apart. He says it very clearly in this introduction. He is very much on the radical left of things. So you're not going to see any love for the Salvinis or Farage or Orbans of Europe, that's for sure. And he was a central figure, a controversial figure in 2015 when all the negotiations were going down. And there are a very polarizing figure, and there are different opinions as to how he handled things. Alexander, get into the story.
Can I just say, I mean, first of all, Varoufakis, and I've never denied this, is an extremely brilliant academic economist. He is a terrible politician and has no understanding of politics or of political reality. And here we see it. We see it in this extraordinary self-justifying statement that he's just published, his party has published, which you just read out. Because on the one hand, he says that, you know, it's not my fault that, you know, Greece is in this terrible hole. I fought against austerity. It was the Europeans who imposed austerity, and I was the person who fought them. And I've got this all these tapes which prove that it wasn't my fault. It was their fault. But what conclusions does he draw from this? Does he draw conclusions that, you know, the European Union is a hostile entity that, you know, Greece needs to break away from? No, he wants to continue with the European Union. He doesn't understand the logic of what the European Union is. And he talks about democracy in Europe, whereas arguably, what his movement ought to be concerned about is democracy in Greece and Greece's own freedom of action and its ability to make its own decisions in order to address its own problems. And of course, the reason why it all failed, and we will go into the discussions that he had with the Eurogroup, which are extremely interesting, but the reason it all failed is because ultimately he was not prepared to break with the euro until almost the last minute. And then when he did come up with a plan for breaking with the euro, I think he knew that Tsipras was never going to agree to it. And the preparations he did were so, frankly, minimal and so much at the very last moment that he can't have taken them seriously. Can I just make one further point? Somebody who goes into a meeting with a hidden tape recorder in order to record all that goes on there is clearly preparing his own defense for the future. He clearly isn't going into any kind of negotiation that he genuinely believes in, which begs the question of why he was going into those meetings at all.
All right, Alexander, before I get into some of the actual recordings, you know, some of the notes that I've taken of the best parts of the recordings. Not that there's any big revelations here, but I want you to tie it into Brexit, because I think the overarching theme of what I listen to from Varoufakis' leaks is that the EU, they play dirty when they negotiate. And I think there's a lot of parallels between how they negotiated with Greece and how they probably negotiated with the UK.
How they did negotiate with the UK, but you know, let's unpack it. Let's go into the details of what your notes say, and bring it all out, because I agree there are striking parallels there.
Okay, so one of the main points is that the EU did not accept any proposals tabled by Varoufakis. That was one of the things that Varoufakis was driving home, and then the EU would leak that Varoufakis didn't make any proposals, and they would leak it to the press. Another point is that the EU threatened Greece with capital controls and Plan B, Grexit. Not Brexit, Grexit. So they constantly made this threat during the negotiations. Another point has to do with EU solidarity. Dijsselbloem, who was the president of the Eurogroup, said, "It's a take it or leave it negotiation." That's a quote, take it or leave it. The economy minister of Portugal, Maria Luís Albuquerque, said, "We respect your decision for a referendum." This is when Varoufakis was talking about taking this to a referendum. For a referendum in Greece. And I quote, "Bear in mind, whatever decision arrives from the decision of your country, you cannot presume the decisions for all the other 18 countries. So whatever the result is of the referendum, don't presume that the other 18 countries are going to go along with the will of the Greek people." Another major point, number four, is the proposal of the Eurogroup and the referendum, where Dijsselbloem says that for the proposal, there is no flexibility. Time has run out. That's a quote. The answer is no, there is no flexibility. So as they were negotiated, Dijsselbloem pretty much shut the door on everything. And from Klaus Renglin, number five, who is the managing director of the EFSF, which is the European Financial Stability Facility, and I quote here, The proposals I see are more oriented to protect the bankruptcy of households and businesses. The goal is not to strengthen the balance sheet of the banks. This could be a problem to us. So this guy, Klaus Wrenglin, was saying that the proposals that were being made were not about strengthening the bank balance sheets, and that was a problem for them. And finally, Alexander from the EU and Draghi, and this has to do with the media leaks. There was a certain part during the negotiations where Draghi made it known to Varoufakis that they know there are leaks going on about Greece's solvency to the media, and that those leaks on bank runs and that the banks were insolvent were going to affect the negotiations. In other words, they were putting pressure on Greece by leaking stuff to the media about how the Greek banks were about to fall apart. And Varoufakis saw this as an attack to Greek sovereignty. And Draghi and the EU officials knew about these leaks. They probably played it up because they know it puts pressure during negotiations. I see a lot of parallels to Brexit in all of this in the negotiating style. A lot of parallels.
Well, first of all, you are absolutely right, because to be very clear, the EU doesn't negotiate. When the EU says that it negotiates, it never negotiates. The way the EU approaches negotiations is like a defective slot machine. You put your money in, but nothing ever comes out because they have their idea. And what you have to do is you have to agree with it. And that was what happened over the course of the Brexit negotiations, where the EU basically said to Theresa May, who proved to be a very weak negotiator, that you've got to agree that, you know, there's going to be this soft Irish border, that you're going to remain in the customs union, that you're going to remain in the single market, that you can't leave the EU until the EU single market and customs union until we agree, and that will be the permanent arrangement. And what they said to Greece was exactly the same, that we're going to decide the bailout on our terms, and they're not going to be terms that, you know, are concerned about Greek households or Greek businesses. They've got to protect the international banks, our European banks, the banks in Germany and France, which are our primary concern. That was said so straightforwardly there. And there you see it. I mean, it's all, that was what happened. That was what happened with the Greek negotiations in 2015. It's what happened with the Brexit negotiations in 2017 to 19. Now, the difference. What was the difference? In the case of the Brexit negotiations, Boris Johnson went over the heads of the EU negotiators and did a deal directly with Macron, Emmanuel Macron of France, which basically cut the EU negotiators out. And he was able to do that by basically working with Macron on an issue where the two of them had mutual interests. But the reason Boris Johnson was prepared to do that was because psychologically, he was always willing to walk away, to say to the EU, look, if you won't negotiate with me, I will walk away and you will be left with nothing. Now, Varoufakis was never prepared to do that. The point about Varoufakis being threatened with Brexit, in other words, with throwing Greeks out of the Eurozone, he should have said, fine, okay, if that's what you intend to do, I'm prepared to go along with that. He should have called their bluff. He never did. Since he never called their bluff, which Boris Johnson was prepared to do, since he never called their bluff, they had him exactly where they wanted him. And they just walked all over him. And that's what anybody who negotiates with the EU finds if they're prepared to act in the way that Varoufakis did, to scramble the metaphors. There's a famous quote by the British politician about Aneurin Bevan about walking disarmed into a negotiating chamber. That's exactly what Varoufakis did. He disarmed himself and they walked all over him.
So when the Greeks voted, and they voted against the proposal that was hammered out in Brussels between Varoufakis and the Eurogroup, Tsipras went to Brussels pretty much the next day and signed everything and more of what the Eurogroup wanted. He dispatched with Varoufakis, got rid of him, and he went up to Brussels and he signed away pretty much Greece's future. Schäuble offered alternatives to Greece many times. And one of those alternatives, I would like you to touch upon that, which was, I believe, 50 billion out of the, not out of the euro, the European Union, out of the eurozone, and a 50 billion euro package over 5 years to help Greece cope with being out of the eurozone. Schäuble did try to offer some sort of off-ramp there. Okay, so can you touch on that aspect of Greece and how it ties
Yeah.
in to what happened with Boris Johnson negotiating with the EU?
Indeed. And that's an essential point. Now, can I just, before we do that, though, make one incredibly important point about these tapes. And this is, in fact, something where we should be grateful to Varoufakis, because we see a committee, the Eurogroup, the finance ministers of the Eurogroup, making all these essential decisions, in effect, practically running the European Union. There is no reference in any European treaty to the Eurogroup. This is an entirely informal committee. It keeps no minutes. It's got no secretariat, apparently, no
Why? Why would
documents,
it keep
and it
minutes?
doesn't even accept written proposals. I mean, that was the other thing that Varoufakis disclosed. They won't even take written proposals.
But why? How do you operate like that,
Because
though?
that gives you enormous unaccountable power. It means that you're able to make all these decisions in total secrecy. There is no paper trail leading back to you. There is no accountability for what you do. And you have a committee like that at the heart of the European Union. How can anybody talk about democracy with the European Union, inside the European Union, when it is operated by committees like that? So, let's be grateful to Varoufakis for at least exposing this dark reality at the European Union's heart. But coming directly to your question, what Schäuble was trying to get Varoufakis to do was precisely what Macron got Boris Johnson to do. What Boris Johnson realized is that if you negotiate with the EU machine, it will grind you down and you will get nowhere. And by the way, all the tactics that were used against Varoufakis, the leaks, the wire pulling, the intrigues with political figures back in London, all those sort of things, they were going on in the Brexit negotiations, just as they were going on in the 2015 negotiations that Varoufakis was trying to conduct. What Boris Johnson was prepared to do was he reached out to the one person within the EU who had the power to break the impasse and who was sympathetic to him, who was Emmanuel Macron. So he went, he ignored all the negotiators. He met with Macron in New York at the UN General Assembly meeting. The two of them got together. They came to an agreement and they imposed it on the EU. And that was why Britain was able to leave the European Union in January in a form that allows it to move forward and to negotiate. Quite possibly, it's increasingly looking like a no-deal Brexit in December of this year. That was precisely what was available to Varoufakis in 2015. He could have done exactly the same thing that Johnson did with Macron. He could have done it with Schäuble. He could have met with Schäuble. Schäuble was absolutely willing to come to a deal with Varoufakis. He said, look, this position of remaining in the euro is unsustainable in the long term for Greece. It is choking your economy. It's disastrous for the EU because we have this running sore in Greece. It's completely wrong, completely unhealthy, bad for everybody. Let's do this deal. You leave the Eurozone, not the European Union, just the Eurozone. We will give you 50 billion euros to help tide you over the inevitable turbulence that that causes. And then once you've sorted your problems out with your creditors, as you should have done back in 2011, 2012, and once you've stabilized your economy properly, we can come back and we can consider whether or not you want to join the euro again. That was a good proposal for Greece. But Varoufakis, who was committed to keeping Greece in the euro, as Tsipras, the prime minister, was, despite what Varoufakis now says, he didn't do it. He wasn't prepared to go and engage in proper, if you like, secret, off-the-table negotiations with Schäuble. Now, can I just say, that shows that he was not an appropriate person to be finance minister of Greece at that time, and that he bears a very heavy responsibility for what has happened. Because if he'd had Greece's best interests at heart, and he'd had the political skills needed to be the finance minister of Greece in that situation, he should have seized on what Schäuble was offering. And that exactly what we said, he should have gone behind the Eurogroup and negotiated directly with Schäuble. And just as Macron and Johnson were able to present what they agreed with each other as a fait accompli to the rest of the European Union, which had to go along with it, even though they didn't like it, the same would have happened in 2015. We would have had a Grexit on acceptable terms. Greece would have been free, and we would not have been in the situation we are still in now, where, as we see, there are recriminations between the present Mitsotakis government and Varoufakis as to who is responsible for the mess Greece is in.
Yeah, that's the problem with Tsipras, Syriza, Varoufakis, that whole group, is that at the end of the day, they're leftist globalists.
Yes.
You know, they may have a soft spot for a sovereign Greece, but that globalist ideology always trumps, you know, the sovereignty of your country. Very quickly, Alexander, two very quick questions to wrap it up. Your thoughts on what I just said right now, and number two, what kind of role does a Farage play?
Yeah, okay.
When you're going through these negotiations as a support system, say, and the GBP freed Boris's hands to be a little tougher with the EU, where Greece was, you know, with the euro, which kind of tied it into Europe, and it couldn't be as aggressive. Is that true? So comment on those thoughts.
Right. The first thing, I'm actually going to disagree with you for once. I don't think Tsipras or Varoufakis have any belief in Greek sovereignty. I think they're soft on it in any way at all. I mean, I come back to my very first point, the very first comment I made almost on this program. Here we have Varoufakis running a political party about democracy in Europe. What about democracy in Greece? Why not care about that? He also, if you know, that long thing that you read at the beginning, which obviously has his agreement, what does he say about defending Greece's borders and in the midst of this migrant crisis? He opposes it. What he opposes it, just as he opposes all the politicians around Europe who are trying to defend the sovereignty and the national interests of their own countries. They are, as far as he's concerned, right-wing demagogues and populists.
Right-wing populism is the exact word.
Right-wing populism, exactly. So, I mean, he is not any kind of sovereignist. He is absolutely a globalist. He is totally committed to the European project. And that is why he failed. That is why, that is not only why he failed, that is why nothing, he could only have failed, because what was needed in that situation was someone who was a genuine sovereigntist. And can I say, there are genuine left-wing sovereigntists in Greece. I mean, I was recently reading a long article, rather a book on the Eurozone crisis by Kostas Lapavitsas, who is an economics professor very much on the left. And he makes many of the same points. In fact, he makes all the same points about the EU that we make. But Varoufakis is not of that opinions. He is a globalist. He is an integrationist. He supports the EU wholeheartedly. He just thinks that in some strange sort of way, it can be reformed, even though that is clearly impossible. What kind of institution that has secret committees running it can conceivably be reformed?
Can I make a point on that very quickly, not to break your train of thought? Yeah. You can't reform these corrupt institutions from within. Just ask Bernie Sanders, who always says he's going to reform the Democrat Party.
So exactly.
It's not going to happen.
It's never going to happen. It's absolutely not going to happen. And what's really provoking him into all of this is, as I said, he's simply now been criticized by Mitsotakis and the conservative government in Greece. So he's coming out and, you know, saying, oh, it's not my fault, but I still believe in this great thing, and I, you know, I want to reform it. Is even though, as you said, like Bernie Sanders, like Jeremy Corbyn in Britain, it's simply not reformable. And I mean, you know, until they understand that, they will never achieve anything. And why do we have the difference in Britain as opposed to Greece? Is firstly, and obviously, Britain is a much, is an immeasurably stronger, much richer, much more powerful, better organized country. But you know, Greece was not without its advantages. And as I said, it did have in Schäuble somebody who was sympathetic and an understanding of the situation. The fundamental reason is because we do not have in Greece a Nigel Farage. We do not have that kind of political movement in Greece. Until we do, we will only get people like Varoufakis and Tsipras coming along. And whenever we get ourselves into these kind of negotiations, the EU will simply steamroll over Greece. So you asked me about Nigel Farage. That is the difference that is made by someone like Nigel Farage. He spent 20 years, more than 20 years, building up a grassroots Eurosceptic movement across Britain, which in a referendum was able to win 52% of the vote. Until we get something like that in Greece, we're not going to see any change. And unfortunately, and I have to say this, yes, there are people on the left who are critical of the EU and would embrace a Brexit. There are people on the right who think the same way also, but they are very much the fringes, the mainstream. There is no one on the mainstream like that. And frankly, there is no sign that anybody with the kind of force of personality that Farage has had in Britain is going to appear in Greece. So that is the fundamental difference.
Is it possible, Alexander, to pull off what the UK did while still being inside the Eurozone and having the euro as your currency?
I think it is, actually. I think if you're, say, Italy, let's say you're Salvini, let's say you become Prime Minister of Italy, let's say you have a strong majority, I think Italy could do it. I think there would be turbulence again. But how is that better than the death by 10,000 cuts that Italy has been going through for 20 years, a totally stagnant economy, millions of its young people constantly out of work? Why not just break free, accept whatever turbulence you have along the way, and then make the most of it, which you can do. I mean, Italy has tremendous resources and competitive industries. But, you know, Italy can do it. Perhaps other big countries, Spain could do it. Maybe France could do it. But the political will so far hasn't been there. And political will, if you have the political will, you can do, well, not anything, but you can do an awful lot. And without that political will, you can do nothing. And the political will simply hasn't been there. We'll see whether if Salvini does become prime minister, he has it. I mean, I should say, and I'm inclined to think that this is more maneuvers to avoid criminal charges and to become prime minister. But, you know, he's not always been consistent in some of the things he's been saying about Italy. I mean, he's been talking recently about Italy remaining in the euro. Now, I hope he doesn't mean that, because, as I said, if he does, then exactly like Tsipras and Varoufakis, he's throwing away his strongest card. What he needs to do is he's got to be to say to the Europeans, I am prepared to take Italy out of the euro. And he's got to mean it when he says it.
Smaller country would not be able to pull it off.
No, a smaller country would not be able to pull it off unless it had the help of someone like Schäuble. Sure.
Schäuble gave Greece the off-ramp.
He gave that offer. He gave the off-ramp. But unfortunately, the present government in Germany would not do that. I mean, present finance ministry in Germany, which is controlled by the SPD, would never make that kind of offer to Greece.
All right. Alexander McCurse, editor-in-chief of the Durand. Thank you very much, guys. If you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below and click on that notifications bell. Smash that like button. Also look for us on iTunes and SoundCloud for an audio copy of this video. And please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation really helps this channel out a lot, especially as we are getting demonetized continuously by YouTube. And also go to the Durand shop and pick up some merchandise. When you purchase merchandise on the Durand shop, that also helps us out a lot. Alexander, we've got magic mugs. We've got all kinds of apparel, shirts, polos.
And we've got all of these things, and they are of the supreme quality, if I may say that. I've said that before. I'm going to say it again because it's true. Because it is, we make the best Durand mugs, the best magic mugs in the business. You will never get anywhere mugs as good as these. They are superb. They keep your tea or your coffee hot. They keep your beer or your champagne cold. You can put them in the microwave and take them out, and your handle is cold and your tea is hot, and they don't chip or flake or break, and they're light to handle, and they're strong, and they look fantastic, and they are perfect in every way. And this one, just to say, has my favorite foreign minister. He's there, that's Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia, who is the great and brilliant negotiator that Yanis Varoufakis, whom we've been talking about in this program so spectacularly, was not. So we have our amazing magic mugs. We have our phenomenal Durand shirts. I'm wearing at the moment this amazing, wonderful 100% cotton Durand long-sleeved T-shirt. It's been a cold day today in London, and this has kept me beautifully warm as I've been out walking my dogs. And you can see it's also got there the Durand logo, the double-headed eagle of the Durand, which, by the way, just to remind everybody, is our very own double-headed eagle. It's not the Roman one or the Byzantine one or the Russian one. It is our very own one, which hovers over the world and looks in all directions and keeps an eye on everything, as we at the Durand aim and seek to do. And of course, we don't just have T-shirts, though. We've also got the best polo shirts you can buy, polo shirts that I've worn in the most amazing, glittering places, at après-ski in the Alps, in stately homes in England, in garden parties, wherever you can think of. They are the best polo shirts you can wear, and they're incredibly comfortable and amazingly hard-wearing also. And, of course, you've got V-neck shirts, and we've got hats and hoodies and stickers, and we've got the most brilliant ebooks covering things like Russiagate and Ukrainegate and also Epstein and, of course, Brexit, which was a subject we've touched on in this video. So Alex is absolutely right. We're under huge pressure all the time from YouTube. Very often they demonetize us and we can't figure out why, because we said things which are never mainstream, certainly, but you know, they're always corroborated and verified and can be established through facts. And yet, as I said, we're under all this pressure. So you support the Duran, you support us in what we do, and you're the owner of these proud things when you come to our shop. So don't hold back, come to our shop, support the Duran. Alex will tell you how.
Just go to theduranshop.com. You'll find a link in the description box down below. Alexander Mercuris, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.